Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ah, motherhood. One minute, you're mom of the year.
I love you, mommy.
Then the next? Not so much. From bath time to bullying, from potty training to puberty, parenting is full of challenges. But one thing is for certain, you are not alone. Welcome to Modern Mom Probs. I'm your host, author, mother, parenting expert, Tara Clark. Join me while we tackle today's modern mom problems. Hey there, welcome back to another episode of Modern Mom Probs. I am your host, Tara Clark. Today, I'm going to be talking to one of the funniest dads on the internet. I'm talking with Mike Julianel. Mike Julianel is a Brooklyn-based dad of two boys and a digital content creator who shares his experiences as a father on social media. His work, you've probably seen it, it's been all over the internet on The Dad, Scary Mommy, Today, McSweeney's. Mike aims to lower the bar for parents everywhere with his jokes, his videos, and his rants on his hugely popular Instagram account, Dad and Buried. Today, we're going to be talking about his new book. So officially, the topic is Dad Truths, the Good, the Bad, and the Exhausting from the Front Lines of Parenting with Mike Julianel. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Right before we hit record, we were chatting about all kinds of things from learning Italian on Duolingo to learning French to forgetting any other languages that you know while you're doing those things.
Or not learning French, as the case may be.
Or not learning French. One time, I was in Paris for a week-long study abroad program when I was in grad school, and we were in Paris, and people kept coming up to me and like asking me for directions in French, mm-hmm. because like they thought that I looked French enough I like belonged in Paris. And I was like, thank you.
That's the plot of a 90210 storyline with Brenda. I don't know if you watched 90210, where she pretends
she's
French.
I grew up on 90210, and I do remember that. Yeah. That I took that as such a compliment. I didn't really think about the Brenda 90210 thing, but I took that as such a compliment that you were like, you think I'm Parisian?
Yeah.
Merci beaucoup.
Well, see, that's funny because if someone in America came up to me and asked me in English for directions, I wouldn't be able to give them to them. They'd be like, this guy apparently doesn't live here because I'm just the worst at giving directions. If I walk out of a place and then walk back in and then I leave again, I'll have no idea where I'm going. Like, I need my wife literally to like hold my hand because she has a great sense of direction. I will just go the wrong way every time. It's bizarre.
That's really cute. I'm like Heather because that is actually my one true savant thing that I do. I have such a killer sense of direction that I can get to a place that I went to once as a child, like 40 years ago, and I could still get back there.
See, my like savant ability is just remembering storylines from 90210 mostly. And stupid pop culture stuff. Right?
So. That's great. I love pop culture. I actually don't get enough opportunity to chat about pop culture.
I was thinking about that
throughout all of this weekend.
Because I was thinking about, you know, being on your podcast today, and I was like, you know what? You know, I wish somebody would invite me on like their movie podcast or something. Because I have a lot of opinions about movies and I love that kind of stuff, but you know, I don't think I've made it big enough to get invited on one of those film podcasts, but we'll see.
Why don't we like turn this? I mean, obviously we're going to talk about your new book, but like, let's talk about movies. What's your favorite movie, Mike?
Well, that's an impossible question. What's my favorite movie? I couldn't possibly, right? I'm constantly going in my head. This is the kind of thing I think about. Like, I could never get a tattoo because I'm too indecisive, but like, what do I really want to say? Like, even when it comes to like buying like a ball cap, I won't wear a ball cap of like a team that's not one of my favorite teams. I have a really hard time like finding one that's one of my favorite teams that I actually like and will wear. Like, so trying to like narrow down like favorite movies, I could name you like 10 that are like in the rotation all the time. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Godfather Part 2, Rosemary's Baby, that kind of stuff. But trying to choose a favorite is really hard. Did you watch the Oscars?
I did.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I polled my followers. I was like, does anybody watch the Oscars? And pretty much everybody was like, no.
Really?
Heather and I watch every year. I think a lot of my followers are probably a little bit younger. It. Yeah, I always watch it too. Even when it stinks, which is usually it stinks. And the movies they award usually aren't the right movies, or aren't like five. They should do it 5 years later. We should be looking back right now at like 2018 and being like, hey, what were actually the best movies from 2018? Because whatever they chose, they were probably wrong.
That's usually the case. I watch it every year. My husband doesn't usually watch it. He usually falls asleep earlier. I like award shows. I'm probably one of those rare birds that enjoys award shows.
I don't mind them. Like, I watch the Grammys or like the MTV Awards. If you put those on, I have no idea who anybody is these days. My wife likes to watch the red carpet for all of those shows. But like watching the red carpet for like the Grammys is just really bizarre. Whereas like the Oscars, it's pretty standard, right? The movie stars and they're in tuxes and nice dresses. The Grammys or MTV stuff, they're wearing like, you know, meat suits like Lady Gaga and that kind of thing. I don't usually watch those, but she'll call me in and be like, hey, check this person out. Or if it's somebody that I like, see what they're wearing. And usually I've never heard of any of the designers or anything like that. But my wife loves to watch that. And then we'll watch the awards and try to stay awake. Although the Oscars started, an hour earlier this year. So that was a little bit easier.
That was super helpful.
Boring. Yeah.
I appreciated that. I don't watch the red carpets, but I like to scroll Instagram during them.
Yeah. Because
then
course,
I feel like I get the highlights and I'm like, oh, okay. If people are making memes about this stuff, then that's where I'm getting my news.
Yeah. That's how I am with like Saturday Night Live. Like, I don't watch it anymore, but the next day, if somebody's talking about it, you know, you'll find it on YouTube or on Instagram, which is kind of the way all the youngsters do it anyway.
Right, exactly. That's how I feel about it, too. So let's do a quick introduction. Mike, you are the mastermind behind Dad and Barry. You've been doing this for a long time. I feel like we've been doing this for probably about the same amount of time. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I started Dad and Barry in the summer of 2010, which was a couple of months before my first kid was born. And it started as just a blog. I'd always been like writing and writing online and, you know, writing for school newspapers and all that stuff. And I was writing online for a while. And then I was like, you know, I should start a blog. And I think I even started a blog a little bit late in terms of when people were jumping on the blog train. But it was a little bit early in terms of like mom and dad parenting blogs and stuff. I wasn't right at the beginning, but I was early enough that a dad was sort of rare to be doing it. And a dad or a parent who was kind of talking shit, you know, and like being honest, but being like snarky and not taking it too seriously and not. Not just talking about the good stuff, and mostly, in fact, talking about the bad stuff, and even exaggerating it a little bit. It's just the way my sense of humor works, and I think it's pretty honest when it comes to parenting, because there is a lot. I think there's more bad than good, but the good is much better than the bad usually is, right? So it's like the peaks are really, really high, but the lows are really fairly consistent. You know, so I started the blog, and nothing, you know, I was just writing for myself. And then a couple of years in, I got a couple of things like, you know, they would share them, or I would talk to somebody and get them shared on Huffington Post. And mostly then it was Twitter. So I got a bit of a following on Twitter, just making jokes. It took a little while, but with any like social media, the more consistent you are, you stick around, people start to notice, hopefully. And then eventually, you know, it was Twitter and Facebook, and then eventually Instagram. And at first, you know, like anybody else, I didn't know what to do with Instagram. You're taking pictures of food, that kind of thing. And I just sort of abandoned it. Then you started to see the parenting people and the other people like just converting tweets into memes, or, you know, just images of jokes, right? And then obviously slowly but surely it's become reels and videos and that kind of stuff, which isn't, I don't really make those so much as I just rant into the camera. Which is sort of what I do, because like doing like a storyboarded sketch where like people have parts and that kind of thing is like, that makes me cringe, as the kids say. So I just kind of stick to, you know, writing jokes and ranting about jokes. And now I have my blog is pretty much dead. But I've made it a newsletter on Substack where I just continue to write about, you know, being a dad and how hard it is and how much it sucks. And the good parts about it. And now I have a teenager, so it sucks even more in a lot of ways. All of the stuff that they warn you about is true. All of the stuff that you know, because you remember when you were a teen, and all you hear are stereotypes about how much of a pain in the ass teens are and how hard it is. And I always complain. Like I always used to say, stop warning us. You know, we know it's going to happen. It's annoying to be warned. But also you were right. because it does. I mean, my kid has been a teenager for like 6 months, but he went from, 12 to 17 in like 2 seconds in terms of his attitude and his behavior. So I write a lot about that. I write about his ADHD, which is a challenge. Luckily I have an 8-year-old son as well, and he's still in kind of the little kid zone. The cuteness factor, he doesn't have BO. I don't have to make him wear deodorant and take a shower quite as much, or it's not as important, as for my 13-year-old. But yeah, my 13-year-old, I think he still doesn't mind, if I'm making jokes about him online or whatever. Like, he's aware of it. He's actually a little bit proud that, like, if he sees one of my memes or something. But I'm assuming at some point that'll change. Like, I don't put him on camera and like make fun of him like that. Although I do have some old videos where, we're joking around and that kind of thing. But my 8-year-old is still totally oblivious, so I can just throw him on there and make fun of him all I want. He has no idea. He doesn't have social media. It's great.
I'm cracking up because, I mean, you covered a lot of things right there.
Yeah, I babbled. And
no, you didn't. No, you didn't. I asked you about yourself and you told me about yourself, and that's exactly what I wanted to hear. And I have so many parallels with that, because I got started on Instagram in 2016, around the same time that you got on Instagram as well, parenting jokes. And everything you described was true. People were just taking pictures of their lunch.
Yep.
And then here we come in with memes and jokes about parenting and the realities of it. And then it evolved into making reels, and I still cringe at reels because that's not where I got my start. It's not where I feel comfortable in my space. And so I'm with you, man.
I mostly just hold the camera up and like it's basically my stories, which were just me walking around complaining about something. I've now sort of converted into reels, but I keep trying to find new ways of making a good reel or trying to do something on TikTok, and I can't get any traction on TikTok.
Well, don't worry, it's going away now. So.
Yeah. Okay. I know. I'm like, cool. Everyone, we have to stuck on Instagram where I have a lot more followers. It makes me uncomfortable to act, right? I'm not going to act.
Yeah.
Obviously, what I do is sort of an exaggerated version of how I am in real life.
Although,
you talk to
it's
Heather.
Hyperbole.
Right. But if you talk to Heather, she will say that slowly over the years, the dad and buried persona and myself have sort of merged, much to her frustration. it's like a heightened version of myself. Obviously, a lot of the stuff I rant about or I joke about is not always something I'm actually like. I posted something the other day, which I posted before, which was just an old tweet about, would you rather have to go make small talk with other parents at the playground or put your hand in a blender? All right, just exaggerating about how frustrating it, not my favorite thing to make small talk, or the only reason you have to talk to this person is because your kids are both on the swings at the same time. You might have nothing in common, but you're in the same boat. And they got a bunch of people, as I always do, being like, you know what, you need to talk to people. You got to teach your kids how to be social, or I love chatting with other parents. I'm like, dude, I'm not actually going to put my hand in a blender. If I have to make small talk, I do. It's just a joke. It's an exaggeration. Because it sucks sometimes. It's a pain to have to do it. It's one of the things kids force you into, right? Having to go to these events or interact with people that, maybe if you're an introvert or maybe you just don't feel like it, you're still forced to do. And sometimes, putting your hand into the garbage disposal seems like a better alternative once in a while.
What I love about your work, I mean, I've been a fan of your work for literally years.
Likewise.
Thanks. Appreciate that. And what I love about yours is that you do go back to trolls and Karens that make comments. That's one of my favorite things. Get it.
Part of that is simply because when you are creating content, sometimes you run out of content, or you run out of ideas, or run out of whatever. So there are times where somebody will take something I said the wrong way, which is fine. I'm used to it, right? Especially in the parenting space where people are really clutching their pearls about raising kids and all of this stuff. One of the main things they always say to me is, imagine your kids reading this. I'm like, look, my kids live in the house with me. They know my sense of humor, right? They know I love them, presumably, but they also know, for the most part, when I'm being sarcastic, they can tell. And guess what? They're sarcastic too. And it was one of the biggest mistakes I ever made, was raising my kids with my sense of humor, because it sucks. I hate it. you know, but sometimes somebody will say something, and if I have a good comeback, you know, I'll throw it out there, and then I'll end up, you know, screenshotting that and sharing it. And sometimes if there's a good exchange, my followers really like it. What they don't see is the times where I don't have a good comeback, where A, either I don't say something, or I don't want to get involved in the kind of argument that maybe somebody's trying to start, or I say something and it falls flat. I don't screenshot that. I don't share that. Like, it's not like I'm hitting 100% every time I have a good comeback, but when I have good ones, you know, I milk it as much as I can, you know, so.
Yeah. Do people ever say like, oh, that never happened? I've absolutely tweeted things where it 1,000% happened in my house. My son said X, Y, and Z. And people are like, yeah, likely story does not exist. I'm like, no, it does. I'm not creative enough to have come up with something better than that.
The kids do say the darndest things, right? So sometimes they really do say something where it's uncanny. Like you're like, that seems really unbelievable. But, you know, yeah, people do say that to me. I usually, you know, sometimes I'll be like, hey, I'm no stranger to exaggerating for a joke or to make a story funnier. Like, I'm not going to pretend that I don't do that. But sometimes it actually is exactly true. Like, there was one that I posted years ago where, like, my 7-year-old, he had a day off from school and I was working from home. This was either during the pandemic or even before it, just working from home. And he's like, you know, why don't you go to the coffee shop and get me something to eat? And I'm like, because I got to do work to make money and to be able to raise you. And he's like, he said something about like, yeah, but if I don't go to school, you'll go to jail, right? Which is like something I've said to him, something I had said to him to be like, you got to go to school because you're going to go to jail if you don't. And then people will be like, he didn't say that. I'm like, he did. Like in this one case, sometimes the kid actually does say the funny thing, whether he understands it or is copying you. You know, it just is what it is every once in a while. But that doesn't stop me from sometimes seeing somebody's tweet and being like, your kid didn't say that shit, right? Like, I do the same thing that people get mad at me about. I won't comment it.
You don't write it, but you're thinking it.
Yes, I have enough self-awareness to be like, you know, I'm not going to do that. But every once in a while, like, come on. Like, there's one famous one where, like, somebody's kids, like a 2-year-old supposedly said something about how words don't die, which is, like a very famous example of it. Somebody's like, shut up, Linda, your kid didn't say that. And, you know, I agree with that commenter. The kid probably didn't say that, you know, but I'm not going to put myself out there.
You're not going to put yourself out there.
Which is what people can't help themselves from putting themselves out there. And sometimes, you know, I take them down a peg if I can. And sometimes they take me down a peg and then I delete their comments so no one can see it.
And then that's it. And then you move on. I never delete comments. It's okay. This is a safe space, Mike. One time, this is years ago, and I didn't tweet this because I know better because people would like jump on me, but it's become a family inside joke. Somehow we were listening to the radio and Hall & Oates came on, and I forgot which song it was. It might have been Rich Girl, Maneater. I don't remember. And my son was like 5 years old. From the back seat of the car, in his car seat, he said, Hall & Oates is music for people who have hit rock bottom.
Oh,
and we were like, what?
I guess he doesn't like Hall & Oates.
He hates them.
Still?
Yes. Yeah, he does not care for them. But it was so funny and so true that I know that I could never put that out
true.
There.
Oh, true that so he said true. It. Not true so, that people who hit rock bottom listen to Hall & Oates. How dare
correct.
You?
Correct. No, true that. No. True that those words came out of his mouth in that verbatim exact way.
Yeah.
But it's just become a family inside joke. But I know that I can't ever say that publicly.
Yeah, right. Because people will immediately just jump on you and be like, you didn't say that. You're making it up. First of all, who cares if it's funny? Who cares if you made it up? I'm an Instagrammer. I'm not the president, right? I can, you know, I can lie about what my kid said. I don't, you know, sometimes
I
like,
I mean, that's the thing. Like,
right.
I'm not that creative. I couldn't come up with that if I tried.
The best, the most I usually do is like, maybe like paraphrase a conversation or something like that, right? Like, you know, just edit it a little bit to make it a little bit funnier or something like that. Or if my kid says something funny and then I'll be like, you know what, let's film that. Right. And then we'll recreate it. That doesn't mean it's been faked per se. You know, we just filmed it and put it a little, you know, polish on it. You're coming to my page supposedly to like, either to be entertained or to like yell at me for, you know, talking shit about Trump or something like that. I get a lot of people who get mad at me about doing that. But then again, that's the other thing. Like, I have a lot of followers. Every once in a while, I feel like I should, you know, I talk about serious things every once in a while, things that affect, you know, raising kids and the world my kids are going to live in the future. And those things make people really, really, really upset, almost as upset as if I pretend my kid said something funny. You know, and it's, sometimes I'll write something about it. And then people will be like, well, when did this page turn political? Like, A, it has been political from the beginning. Been. But also, yeah. Like, if you scroll through and you scroll through 300 of my posts, there'll be like, within those 300, there'll be like three that are political. Like, that's not a lot, guys. Every once in a while, no. I do it. Sue me.
No, it's not. It's true. I want to talk about your new book, Dad Truths. Yes, the good, the bad, and the exhausting from the front lines of parenting. Look at that. That illustration sums up parenting. What inspired you to write the book?
Well, so I've always sort of wanted to write a book. And I've been writing my thoughts and rants and all of this stuff for so long. But the problem is when you have kids and you have a full-time job, people always assume like I make a ton of money from Instagram, which is not true. I'll get some opportunities sometimes, like ability to write freelance articles or a free product or a trip. I've gotten like two trips, which is amazing when you get a trip.
That's cool.
Very rare. I mean, I've been doing this for like almost 15 years, right? I've had like two trips. And so finding
Disney,
the time
send
to
Mike
like,
a trip.
Yeah, please do.
I'm manifesting that for you.
Thank you. So it's hard to find time to write a book, but not only that, it's the pitch process, right? So like, it's like writing a cover letter for a job. You need to write a pitch and you need to have enough of the book to entice a publisher or an agent or somebody to look at it and want it. And every time I start doing that, it ends up going away because I'm too busy and I'd rather just actually write the book than write the pitch and blah, blah, blah. So I had a bunch of like kind of false starts. And then eventually somebody came to me and was like, I love your Instagram. You know, I'm an editor. I work at this publisher. I'd love to explore doing a book with you. And basically like, I'm waiting for that email for like my entire life, just waiting for somebody to be like, here, you know, because I'm like lazy. And finally, somebody did. You know, we kind of figured out what it should be about. And obviously, my big thing was, I just want to make sure it captures my voice and tone, which I think is the one thing. There's a million people writing about parenting. There's a ton of dads writing about parenting. There's a million funny moms and dads out there, you know, talking trash, making jokes, that kind of thing. The one thing that I can say is unique to me is just my style and my voice and my tone. And I try to keep that consistent. I mean, I don't really have to try. It's just sort of who I am. And I've gotten pretty good at like maintaining my brand. So much so that if I write something like sappy or sentimental, people will be like, are you okay?
You're like, blink twice if you need help, Mike.
Exactly. And I don't do that very often because it doesn't come naturally to me. But usually like on my kids' birthdays or something like that, I'll write something a little bit more heartfelt. But with the book, it was like we kind of figured out I'd had previous ideas and most of my previous ideas were like a little bit harsher. And my publisher was like, if we're trying to appeal to a broader audience and not just people that already follow you and know who you are, like, let's start a little softer. So some people who come to the book might be like, ah, it's a little bit less, you know, edgy or whatever. But it starts from like labor and pregnancy. Baby, toddler goes through sort of elementary school, right? So a little bit of chapter by chapter sort of thing about different age ranges where I just, you know, rant and sort of tell the truth. Most of the people online and most of the books that you read are very much like either do this because this is what works. And I don't think there's any one thing that works. Every kid, every family, every situation is totally different. Or it's like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. It's incredible. And I'm trying to be like, yeah, sure, it's the best thing that ever happened to me, but a lot of it is garbage. It really makes your life a lot harder. You're exhausted. It's expensive, all this stuff. But, you know, like I said earlier, there's a bunch of highs, high highs, a lot of lows. And I just try to write about it honestly and humorously. And it's pretty light. And there's like illustrations and stuff in it. That a really cool illustrator did, which is funny because when they first sent the illustrations, my kids were all laughing because it looked a lot like me because they clearly like took my photos and like,
yeah,
did versions of me for some of the illustrations. And they're just laughing at how, because like, you can't really see in here, but like the guy's, he's got a very furrowed brow, which
like
I typically have.
Yeah,
right.
I can see
the only
that.
Thing is there's no flip flops. They should have had, because I wear flip flops constantly.
Oh my God, that's amazing. You wear flip-flops all throughout Brooklyn?
Oh my God. See, I have a friend. A friend makes fun of me all the time. He's like, that's so gross. I'm like, you know what? Everything's gross.
If you're the woman of a certain age, like myself, and occasionally you say, was that a hot flash? Am I too young for hot flashes? I'm not sure what's going on here. Well, then listen up, because this ad is for you. Our new sponsor, Winona, is here to help women who are dealing with menopause or perimenopause. You're watching me put my hand up right now. Winona is a collection of OBGYN health professionals who believe that your symptoms are important, real, and deserve to be taken seriously. Phew, thank goodness. Winona is the home for physician-prescribed bioidentical hormone replacement therapy with an easy-to-use network of doctors based out of your state who can make getting started with HRT a breeze. Winona's bioidentical HRT is made from plant-based hormones rather than synthetic ones, so it aligns with your body's natural rhythm to offer relief from hot flashes, weight gain, and other uncomfortable symptoms. 80% of women who use Winona find relief within just 90 days. So be sure to visit buywinona.com today to start your free visit. With free shipping in the U.S. and the ability to pause or cancel at any time, your path to wellness has zero obligations. So be sure to use my special code, it's modernmom, at buywinona.com for 25% off your first order. That's buywinona.com/modernmom.
Okay, true story. So, you know, we used to live in Manhattan, and when we did, anytime I wore flip flops, which wasn't very often, but anytime I did, I would have to like come home and wash my feet in the bathtub. Yeah. And like my feet would run black with dirt.
So that doesn't, I don't know. Look, I mean, I'm in Brooklyn, and the area that I'm in now is a little bit more like neighborhoody than like city street, right? At least where I am. It does not take us long to get to those more city street areas. But when I walk my kids to school or do whatever, you know, I'm not walking on like these garbage strewn streets or anything like that. I'm walking through nice little neighborhoods and stuff. But yeah, you know, I wear them
in
Manhattan.
You're fancy. Where are you, like Park Slope?
No.
Are you Park Slope fancy?
We were in Park Slope years ago. And then we moved briefly to North Carolina to give that a shot for a variety of reasons. And then we came back because we did not like it for a variety of reasons. And when we came back, we moved from Park Slope to Windsor Terrace, which is like a neighborhood over.
You're fancy.
Very
fancy
same
schmancy.
Thing. The section I'm in is not super fancy, but I do love Park Slope and I do love Brooklyn. So I went to school. I grew up in Connecticut. I went to school in Boston and lived there for like another 10 years and never thought I'd leave. Thought it was my favorite place I'd ever live. And then I moved to Brooklyn. And I've actually been here longer now. And it is incredibly expensive, cripplingly so, but still my favorite place I've ever lived.
That's awesome. That's very cool. I'm sorry I derailed you with the geography talk there.
No problem. I love talking about Brooklyn.
I love that. Yeah, we were on the Upper East Side for 10 years, and then we moved out to come to New Jersey, which is where we are now.
When I first moved, because we were at the point in Boston where we were like, all right, let's move out of the city, because we lived in the South End in Boston. Let's move out of the city to the suburbs, get some outdoor space, bigger space. And then suddenly we had to move to New York. And we were like, if we're going to live in New York, let's do Manhattan. Let's do it for real. And then we saw that not only were we not getting we're not getting anything cheaper, we're not getting any more space, we're definitely not getting outdoor space. But like, let's look at Brooklyn. I had some friends who lived in Brooklyn, so we checked it out. You know, and parts of it reminded us of Boston, tree-lined streets and that kind of stuff, which you don't necessarily expect. I mean, they have that in the villages and in the Upper East and West Side, too. You know, it's not like everybody lives in Times Square.
Right. Yeah. Well, let that be like the takeaway, the disclaimer for everyone that lives outside of the tri-state area.
Not only do we not live in Times Square, we don't go there. We do our best to avoid it at all costs.
Except that this past weekend I was there because my son and I went to go see a new show called Water for Elephants, which was fantastic, by the way.
On the book, yeah.
It was great. And we were like, yeah, Times Square, oof.
Yeah, yeah. My wife takes my son. So my wife, Heather, has like a background in musical theater, in like marketing it, not performing in it. And she takes my oldest they went to Hamilton a couple of weeks ago because he loves it. And they finally got to go see it, or he finally got to go see it. We'd already seen it. And she used to work right in a building in Times Square, like the MTV building.
I did too. Yeah. That's so funny. I wonder if Heather and I talked about that. We probably did. I don't remember. But I worked at 1515 Broadway. Yeah,
exactly.
And I always point to it and I tell my son, I'm like, I used to work there right before you were born.
And she would just complain, like just the commute, just having to get off the train and suddenly you're right in the heart of Times Square. And it's just like, I wish I weren't here. You know, yeah. Midtown, you know what? It's funny. Worst.
I had the other reaction. I used to get out and I would like breathe it all in the energy and the vibe. Yeah, and yeah, it yeah. would like hype me up. And then my husband was the exact opposite. If he ever had to meet me after work, if we were going to see a show or going to dinner, he was like, this is the worst.
Yeah. And I That's was how like, I feel.
I felt like that after work, but I didn't feel like that in the morning. And maybe it's because in the morning, it's not as crowded. There aren't really tourists there.
Yeah, right. It's just people that work there. Yeah, they're not there.
Exactly. Yet. So it was a different vibe early in the morning versus post-work. But whatever. I want to talk more about this. I want to talk about how in the book, you call it the antidote to the aspirational parenting craze.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So that was a line that my publisher and I came up with. It really just means that, like, you're not reading my book to be like, because you want
to. Dr. Becky.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You're not like, I want to be like this guy. This guy is living the parenting life I want. It's amazing. He knows what he's doing. He's doing everything right. It's more like you want to read my book and then you'll be like, oh, now I feel better about myself because he's terrible at all of this. And if he's managing, then you know what? He's like, I can do it too, right? Anybody who reads it, right? It's much more lighthearted. It's not like be like me. It's like, if I can do it, you can do it too, because I'm an idiot. And I stink at a lot of it. And there's a lot of stories in there about mistakes that I've made. And now that I have a 13-year-old, I'm sure I'm going to have a lot more material because he's constantly telling me the mistakes I'm making all the time.
That's rough.
It's not about like this. My Instagram from the beginning was never, I'm not an expert. I'm not really here to give you any advice, although sometimes people do ask me for advice. And I'm much better at giving advice than following it. But I don't think there's any such thing as a parenting expert. I don't think anybody really knows what they're doing, no matter how much they pretend that they know what they're doing. It's a crapshoot every single day. We're not even going to know until our kids are like in their 30s if we did a good job, right? It takes a long time for, you know, a human being to finally be like, okay, you know, I'm grown up, and I still don't think I'm grown up, right? My parents still probably are like, I don't know how he's going to turn out, right? So they don't know. And if you turn out good, you turn out bad, you don't know what you did. You know, what the butterfly effect was from what you did when they were 5 or 10 or 12, what you did right or wrong. So, you know, I try to take it a little bit less seriously. Obviously, it's a serious job and I care a lot about doing it well. But I think it's just more important to just sort of do it than to be concerned about, you know, am I doing this right? Am I doing this wrong? You know, with some obvious exceptions, like I'm not giving my kids cigarettes, right? There's some basic things you don't do. But for the rest of it, you know, whatever works for you, you got to do what you do to got to do to get by. And the book and my Instagram and all of my stuff is pretty much like, you know, you can do it. People have been doing it for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And kids have been surviving and the human race has been, I don't know about thriving lately, but, you know, we're still around, you know.
We're here. Yeah, we're doing it.
It's really hard, but also like it's sort of not that hard, right? Like it's really hard on a day-to-day basis. But at the end of the day, odds are, you know, things will be basically okay. And we agonize over every little decision and all these little things that I don't know that really add up to all that much. As long as you get some of the big stuff right, as long as you're there for your kids, they know you love them and you try, odds are, you know, they'll be okay. Unless they end up being Republican, but you can cut that part out. People get mad.
I don't know. I'm going to think about that. We may or may not. It depends. Depends how your book sales, yeah, how no you want kidding. Your book sales to go.
So that's another thing I've been agonizing about lately, because I don't expect the book to be like some huge bestseller, right? There's a lot, books are hard. There's lots of stuff out there. My biggest goal is that, you know, people read it and tell me they like it. And I just want an opportunity to write another one, because now that I've gone through the process, I understand it a little bit better. Plus I have some ideas and I'm hoping that this will do well enough that I can make it. This first one was a little bit more of a collaboration between me and the publisher. Like, hey, what can we do with your persona? What makes sense? And the next one, should I get the opportunity? And I'll probably pitch, because I have a pretty good idea and I got to start doing it. I'll probably pitch around, but I would much prefer that my publisher is like, let's just do another one so I don't have to go through that process. And I think the next one will be a little bit edgier, just a little bit. You know, if you read my Instagram, sometimes people get mad because it seems a little bit harsh. This first book is not really super harsh because we want people to like it. But once people get a taste, you know, maybe I can it's like a little sneak attack. Trojan horse some more rants into the next book.
That's usually how that stuff works, though, because you sort of wet their whistle.
Exactly.
And then you just sneak attack in from the other door.
You thought I was a nice guy? Wait till you get my second book.
I recently had the worst review, and my book came out, and I wrote it in the summer of 2020, which was 4 years ago.
Oh, wow. Right in the begining of the pandemic.
It was terrible. Yeah. It was actually, I literally got my book deal April of 2020. It was terrible. That's a whole nother story for a different episode. But long story short, my book came out in April of 2021. And just recently, probably in the last 6 months, someone left the meanest review about my jokes. And like, I think it was particularly one of my chapters was called Cry It Out, MF-er. And she really was very, like, she took it seriously. It was obviously sarcasm. And she was just like, this is the worst advice that I've ever heard.
Did you cry it out with your kids? I did. People got so mad. I wrote about it on my blog. People get so mad.
A little bit. And then, yes and no. I don't know. I only have one son. He's 11 now. And I don't know.
He's fine.
I don't remember.
But
he's
this
fine.
Is the thing,
totally
right?
Fine. He's
yeah,
totally fine.
He's fine.
But I just love that people just simply can't take a joke sometimes.
It's clearly insane.
She was mad that I called, you know, the child an MF-er.
And I was like, my gosh,
you know,
right?
I'm kidding, right? Yeah. Like, obviously, we're joking here. This is a humorous book.
I do that all the time. We're all, if I call them jerks, if I call them a-holes, something like that, people will get so mad. And I'm like, dude, I'm not saying this to their faces. Like, I'm saying this on my funny account to you. And if they,
it's
like
hyperbole.
I said, exactly. And if they find it, they'll be like, maybe they'll be mad for a second, but odds are they're going to understand that A, I'm joking, B, that I've never gone up to them and called them a-holes to their faces. They get it. And it never ceases to amaze me, because that's the problem, is you think you have your followers, but sometimes something goes beyond the reach of people that follow you and goes to people that aren't familiar with you, and they come in. But one of the good things about having some dedicated followers is a lot of times when those fights start, you don't have to get in because your followers will defend you for you. And I love that, right? I love that about, and then, you know, aside from just Instagram, parenting in general, and one of the things about social media that is helpful is that you always find somebody who sort of had the same struggle or who's gone through the same thing, or you can find somebody if you're worried about what you're going through. And like that solidarity that you can kind of generate through accounts like ours, right? Where, hey, look, it's okay to vent. It's okay to complain. It's okay to joke about how your kid sucked today or did some bullshit that was annoying or whatever. At the end of the day, just because you're doing that doesn't mean you're a bad parent or you don't like your kids or whatever. But there are never stop being, you know, holier than thou people who, oh, I never did this, or I make a joke about, you know, letting my kids, you know, have extra screen time because I don't want to deal with them. And people are like, this is awful. Maybe if you actually sat down with your kids, they wouldn't, you know, it's sometimes it's really, really tiresome. But sometimes, again, it's a great fodder for me to have a good comeback and then, you know, share that around. And the people who get me love it, and the people who don't keep coming at me, and then they give me more material, right? So it's a self-sustaining cycle.
Yeah, it totally is. It totally is. I ask this next question of all of my guests. What do you think is the biggest modern mom problem out there right now?
Well, look, so if you're talking about like real life problems, that's a totally different thing, because there's lots of things going on, you know, politically, climate change, all of that stuff. But I think one of the biggest problems is just this inability of people to give each other the benefit of the doubt when it comes to parenting, right? Because most of us, no matter what we do and what different tactics we use, at the end of the day, we're all trying to do what's best for our kids. We're all loving our kids. And sometimes somebody's going to be doing something where in that moment, you might be like, I wouldn't do that with my kids. And then you just jump to conclusions like, oh, that person's a bad parent, or that person is doing something wrong for their kids. And instead of there being empathy, there's criticism and judgment. And I don't know that that's a modern mom problem. I think it's been happening forever. But because of social media and because of how easy it is to put somebody on blast or to react to a joke that somebody makes and to make assumptions, I think that the same thing is happening. It's not even just about parenting. Like, there's just an inability to step into somebody else's shoes and to give them the benefit of the doubt in terms of, all right, what this person says I don't agree with, but they probably have good intentions. Although there's a lot of people out there that don't. But for the most part, when people are raising kids, we're all just trying to figure out what works best for our kids. And we all sometimes have lapses. Sometimes we take a shortcut or we do something that, you know what, you know, giving your kid the soda, you know, sometimes is a couple of sips of soda is better than dealing with the tantrum if you're in the middle of some shit. And then somebody sees you giving your kid a sip of soda and they're like, how dare you? What are you doing? You're going to ruin your kids, right? They see that one instant and they're never able to step back and be like, you know what, this guy, these are his kids. Unless you see somebody doing something really egregious or really awful, I think we can probably safely assume that most of us who have kids, you know, are doing our best and are loving our kids and trying our best for them rather than assuming the worst, which I think a lot of people do these days. I don't know if that's the biggest modern mom problem, but it's definitely something I encounter both in the real world and online.
That counts. It totally counts. I'm adding that one to the list. Actually, you're not the only one that said that. And that's a recurring theme. The reason why I ask it every week is because I'm trying to get a sense of the scale of these problems, if that makes sense. And right now, social media comparison is leading.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would actually fit your answer in with that. And so,
it's so easy, right? Because everybody has it. It just takes typing, right? In order to just judge somebody really quick or throw off an insult or something like that. Like, it's really low impact for someone to have to do that. Like, you could be in your pajamas on your phone. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to learn anything. You can just see an image or a video or a clip or a joke and just immediately be like, you know what? Screw this person and just say something mean.
Yeah, it's just a snapshot in time, and then everyone's just going to jump on it.
But I love it sometimes, right? Because again, it gives me an opportunity to share a funny comeback if I have one and spread that around. And there's been a couple of that. Sometimes if somebody doesn't get a joke, this is just so fun to mess with them. And I have a couple of exchanges that they keep going on. Some people just don't stop, and they just keep, even if I'm clearly just responding in the most douchebaggy, exaggerated, I'm being a jerk way because you think I'm a jerk, I'm just going to lean into it and they'll keep going. It's just like, keep it coming. I love it.
Oh my God. It's amazing. Mike, tell everyone, where can we find you? Where can we get your new book?
Well, I'm on Dad and Buried on Instagram, on Substack. I think it's like dadandburied.substack.com. I share a lot about my book in both of those places. The book comes out April 2nd. But you can pre-order it now, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, a lot of local bookstores. You can get it on your Kindle. People ask me if there's going to be an audio version. Not just yet. I don't think there's too many plans for that. I don't know that I want to sit in a booth and like record. I know that as I'm reading it, I'll be like, shit, I'll be like editing it, or I want to edit as I'm reading it out loud. Like, I'm scared to even read it right now because I know I'll notice stuff that I could have, you know, fixed or made punchier or something like that. But the book comes out April 2nd. Pre-orders are important. So, you know, when you order it, it doesn't matter when, now, later. Father's Day, we're going to be making a big push. It's not just for dads. It's for moms too, but it's a great gift. I'm trying to think if I'm anywhere else. You might see me in the street. Do you ever get recognized?
No. People always say to me, they're like, wow, you must get recognized a lot. No, never.
I get recognized once in a while.
No one has ever really, people do kind of like look at me, but no one's ever like come up and said like, hi, Sarah.
There's a couple of things that I wear a lot. Like I'm a Dolphins fan, so my Dolphins cap, right? So like, and in Brooklyn, not necessarily tons of people wearing Dolphins caps, right? So like, so every once in a while I'll get spotted. It's very rare and incredibly awkward and weird. So don't come up to me if you spot me. Although it's even weirder if somebody messaged you after the fact, like, I saw you on the subway. Like, all right.
That's creepy.
That's a little weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know what? If you see me in the street, stay away from me. Just go to the bookstore and buy Dad Truths and let me make another book, because the next one I think will be even better.
That's a beautiful way to end it. Mike, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Modern Mom Probs. I hope you enjoyed our deep dive in today's problem with me, your host, Tara Clark. Join me next time when I'll be interviewing another great guest and tackling another modern mom problem. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review and a rating. As always, you could head over to Modern Mom Probs on Instagram and give me a follow, or check out my book, Modern Mom Probs, A Survival Guide for 21st Century Mothers, available online wherever books are sold. Well, that's it for today. See you next time, folks.